You are watching Forbidden Knowledge TV.
Get that upgrade.
Hey, babe. Let's take a flight.
Yes.
Where do you want to go?
I don't know.
Get that upgrade.
Anywhere you are, though.
That's what's up. Are you packing your bags?
You already know.
Get that upgrade.
Make your best now. Oh, it's never too late. It's never too late. It's never too late to make your best now.
Ooh, I want to upgrade.
I want to upgrade. Let me get that upgrade.
Make your best life.
Biohack my life. Biohack your life. Biohack my life. Biohack your life. Biohack my life. Biohack your life.
I know that's right. You can say that twice. I write the code, I'ma biohack my best life. Give me the upgrade. I spent enough days trying to figure out my way, no longer in the maze. Had to get out my way.
We are live for Biohack Your Sex Life. What's good, Devon Taylor? What's good, what's good? Hello, everybody. We are having a live episode today about abusive relationships, toxic relationships, how to know if you're in one, how to get out of one, but basically how to know if you're in one. I was in a very, very toxic and abusive relationship for quite a long time and didn't even know I was in one. So we will be going over that today on Biohack Your Sex Life. Hosted by me and Billy Carson. He went to go grab some coffee, so he will be back. Welcome, welcome. Hello, everybody. Just to let everybody know, my book is out. The Recipe to Elevated Consciousness is out. You guys can get it on Amazon. The feedback has been amazing, so make sure you guys check it out. Amazon, The Recipe to Elevated Consciousness. Available now, and you're stuck in a toxic relationship. It's just a choice to get out of it, Jay. Just a choice. I was in a very toxic relationship for a very long time, and I didn't even know it. I did not even know it. There is all different types of relationships that are toxic and abusive. You know, it's not just physical. There is mental abuse within relationships. Mental abuse, emotional abuse. So, you know, there's all different types of toxic and abusive relationships that you can be in. You don't have to be getting beat up to be in a toxic relationship. That's one of the mistakes that I made in my life. I thought that, you know, I was in a good relationship because I wasn't getting punched every day. So, but we will be touching on that today. Yep. You're back.
I'm back. That's with some coffee. Cafe au lait.
thank you about the book. Yes, my book is out. Make sure you guys check it out.
That book, and I got it right here.
Yes,
everything around on my desk. I'm surrounded by friggin' books.
Yeah, that's great. That's great.
People, they don't know. I mean, you've seen it, but boy, they have no idea.
Yeah. The recipe. Yes.
There we go.
Recipe to Elevated Consciousness, available on Amazon, on ForbiddenKnowledge.com, and ElizabethIHoekstra.com.
That's right.
Yes.
Okay. Hey, thank you, Lee Grisby. I really appreciate it. Yes. By the way, Woke Doesn't Mean Broke is a bestseller in the UK in two categories in finance, and a bestseller now in the Netherlands, which is incredible. I would have never thought the Netherlands, but it's a bestseller in the Netherlands. So pretty cool stuff. Thanks again, Lee Grisby. Appreciate it.
That's great. Congratulations. Yeah. Worldwide bestseller. That's what's up.
Yeah. Compendium is back on the bestsellers list again. Compendium of the Tablets.
Good.
Yeah. Saw that today in two categories in the UK, in Australia, and in the Netherlands as well.
Mm.
Pretty cool.
Nice.
All right. So today we're going to talk about toxic relationships.
Yes.
All right. I have some great topics to talk about too. I heard what you were saying while I was getting the coffee ready, you know, about you don't have to necessarily be getting, you know, beat up to be in a toxic relationship.
Yeah.
And that is so true, you know, because I've been in that situation where I was actually in a relationship where it was toxic. And don't think you only need to be a woman to be in a toxic relationship. You can also be a man and be in a toxic relationship. It really has a lot to do with psychology, the psychology of the person that's being abusive, how they're able to wield their psychological powers over you.
Yeah.
You know, and it's incredible because you don't even realize it.
Yeah, exactly. That's the crazy thing about it is you don't even realize that you're in one. You know, I was in an abusive, physically abusive relationship, a couple of them. Mm. And, you know, after experiencing that, I thought, you know, my next relationship was amazing because I wasn't getting slapped around every day. Mm-hmm. So I was like, you know, I'm tripping if I think that this is a bad relationship because, right. You know, he doesn't hit me.
Yeah.
So I must be winning here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That wasn't it. Yeah, exactly. No. And, you know, you told me a little bit about that situation. It was really mental manipulation is what it was.
Emotional abuse, which is the hardest abuse to catch. Mm-hmm. It's so difficult to even recognize because they, you know, narcissists have a very, very specific and clever way of tricking you into feeling like you're wrong. And it's, you know, you're not doing the right thing and it's, you know, they're perfect at everything. And, you know, it's just that you're tripping all the time. That's your, you know, it's no good.
Yeah.
No good.
A narcissist is actually that way because of a brain defect, to be quite honest with you. It's a mental illness is what it is. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I learned this when I was studying at MIT for applied neuroscience. They showed us the brain of a narcissist and the brain of a what, quote unquote, would be a normally functioning person. And the brain of the narcissist was crazy because it literally had all these dark spots in it and empty spaces where there should have been activity and blood flow, and there just weren't. So if you look at the brain scan of a narcissist, if you look it up, matter of fact, I think I'm going to look up one right now and show it to you on a share screen and show you a narcissistic brain, a narcissistic psychopath brain. And you'll see exactly what I'm talking about.
Crazy, because literally these functions light up different parts of your brain. So if a part of your brain is more active than another part of your brain, it's going to make you do certain things. Like if your fear center, your amygdala is overactive, that means you probably have massive amounts of anxiety all the time because that fear center in your brain is lit up. You know, the blood flow, all the blood is going there. You know, it's very, very highly active. Mm-hmm. So if you have these specific, you know, parts of your brain that are highly, highly active and other parts that are not, you know, they can really cause you to act in certain ways. Narcissists are the perfect example. So yeah, if you could show a picture, share a screen, that would be interesting.
Let me share my screen right quick and let's have a quick peep at what I'm talking about. I got so many windows open. This is wild.
Yeah, you do.
Hold on, let me actually get it up here and then switch back to.
I almost like feel bad for people that are narcissists because they really, first of all, they don't even know. They really don't even know that they are. They think that they just are that way. They don't realize, you know, that they're actually being like this to people. Like, wow.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
So can you see my screen now?
Yeah.
Okay. So if you can see my screen, what you're looking at here on the left, looking at a normal brain or what's considered to be quote unquote normal, right? And on the right side, you're looking at the brain of a narcissist. This is a brain scan of a person that's narcissistic, a narcissistic psychopath or a narcissist. And you can see here where the brain is clearly much different than the brain on the left. and you see these dark spots I was telling you about, these areas don't have any activity or blood flow when with regards to that level of thinking, how their brain functions and thought. And you can see where the lobes are, right to the left and right of the temporal lobes. You can see that these lobes are dark.
Wow. They're, you can also tell that the frontal cortex, there's not much activity there. So that's your emotional, logical, and thinking right. brain.
Mm-hmm, so exactly.
Look at from left to right. I mean, mm-hmm. it's lit up for a normal brain, you know, yeah. for a normal brain. It's mm-hmm. hardly even active. But you can also tell the cerebellum in the back there, your reactive brain is completely lit up over in the narcissistic right. side.
Exactly. Exactly. And did the images change now? Is it a different image?
No, same one.
Same one? Okay. Let me show you guys one more angle here real quick, and then we'll move on. But this is pretty interesting stuff because a lot of people think that people are narcissistic just because they want to be. No, their brain has them like that.
Mm-hmm.
Can you see this?
Yep.
Here's a normal brain on the left, again, quote unquote normal, right? There's no such thing as truly fully normal, but quote unquote normal. Mm-hmm. On the right, this is a narcissistic psychopath. And again, you can see a huge difference. Huge difference here.
Wow. Look at the amygdala. That's their fear center. There's right. no fear in a psychopathic brain.
Mm-hmm. No.
Their fear center is completely shut down. Completely yeah. shut down. Oh, wow.
That's crazy, huh?
Yeah.
I mean, just look at the activity here in the medial prefrontal cortex.
Yeah.
Versus this activity. It's just night and day difference. Literally, virtually night. And this is day. This is night.
Yeah.
So they're not functioning in a normal brain capacity. And so there's no amount of reasoning that you can do with these people. There's no amount of begging and pleading. There's no amount of hoping and wishing that's going to change them, because they have to first change their brain.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not even aware, they're not even aware that their brain is not functioning properly, it's most likely never going to happen.
Unfortunately. Yeah.
They would need to go see somebody like Dr. Amin, get a SPECT scan.
Yeah.
And then he would need to put them on a particular regimen to help bring their brain function to normal.
Mm-hmm.
That would be the only way. That would be their only hope, I think, to clear that brain and get that brain activity where it's supposed to be, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So we're dealing with, with a severe mental illness is what we're dealing with.
And they don't even realize it. They think that it's perfectly normal, that they're perfectly normal, and everybody, like, they're not aware of these things. That's why I can't even fault, like, that relationship that I was in. I really can't fault him.
Mm-hmm.
I really can't. It was honestly my fault because I stayed with him for mm-hmm. way too long. You know, I stayed with him for 4 years.
Right.
But I was so, my brain was so screwed up because I thought I was just a piece of crap. You know, he really, really made me feel like I was a piece of crap, which is something that, you know, if you're with a narcissist, you'll feel like that all the time. Like you're messing up. Like, you know, you're about to get in trouble for everything all the time.
They have you walking on eggshells.
Yes.
I was with a narcissist for 25 years.
Mm.
That's why I would say I did a 25-year sentence. I did a 25-year bid.
Mm.
And it was, she just was extremely narcissistic and by every means. I mean, a narcissist that was also jealous. So they had that combination of the two.
Mm-hmm.
And every single day we're walking on eggshells. You didn't know what you could say, what you couldn't say. You didn't know how you could look, what you couldn't look. You didn't know what to do, where to go. Everything was a guess, and you had to make your best guess to keep mm-hmm. the peace.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
you can't win an argument with a narcissist either. No, they're always right. You can never.
They're always right. So arguing is just a waste of energy.
It is.
Absolute waste. And we can kind of see the effect of what happens with a narcissist. I'm not going to mention any names. The other night happened on TV. The power that a narcissist has over someone to make them do the most outrageous things.
Yes.
We all saw that. The whole world saw what a narcissist can do. They can really control and pull your strings like a puppet and have mm-hmm. you out here looking like a complete ass while they sit back and laugh. You know,
exactly.
So, but
exactly.
Anyway, you know, it is what it is. But we are going to talk about some of these some of these signs that you're in a toxic relationship. And like you said, you've made a very important point there, Elizabeth, when you said it was your fault because you were the one that stayed in their relationship. And that's a very, very important thing. It was my fault because I'm the one that stayed in a relationship. Now, I was playing a long game because I had five kids and I was trying not to pay, you know, making sure they all got to college because I wasn't about to pay no $100 million. But the fact is, you know, I stayed there and I literally wasted a lot of good years of my life. Mm-hmm. And what a lot of people don't realize is you do have a choice. And when we understand and begin to realize that the situations that we're in, a lot of the times are based on the decisions that we ourselves are making, then we wake up to the reality that, oh, it's actually our fault because we were the poor, the person with the poor judgment. We were the person that put ourselves in a situation or into a relationship that is not feeding us our spiritual side. It's not making us healthy. That's not helping us progress. That's not doing what it's supposed to do. And we're the ones that continue to allow it to persist by staying in that situation. Once you analyze and realize that that there is no reasoning, the only other option is to move on and save some of your energy for someone else.
It's not necessarily even a bad thing. I didn't mean that negatively, even towards myself, that it was my fault. You know, it was my choice. It wasn't really my fault. It was my choice to stay in those things. And, you know, one of the most powerful things that can happen to a person, to a human being, to you, is realizing that you have the power, that you create everything that's going on in your life, that you attract the trauma that you're going through in these bad relationships, these toxic relationships, and you attract the great stuff too. So once you realize that and take responsibility for yourself and for your own life, you become the most powerful mofo that out there. Yes. Period. You know, no one can tell you anything because you understand that you got the power. So I finally understand that throughout my lifetime, I've attracted every single traumatic moment, everything, you know, and my plan of the adoption and the trauma that happened at the beginning of my life. I mean, that was predestined. I picked that, you know, I picked that so I could have spiritual growth throughout this lifetime. So I could go through this pain and agony of these different things so I could become strong. So I really attribute my strength to all the trauma that I've been through. And I take responsibility for it all.
I love it.
It's a very powerful place to be.
That's real powerful. Dr. Gary Lewandowski, he's a PhD. This is what he says about toxic relationships. One of the ways to know that you're in one: a partner who offers unsolicited suggestions for what you need to improve on, doesn't support your interests or hobbies, and fundamentally criticizes aspects of who you are, is definitely a toxic person, and you're in a toxic relationship. He's a professor of psychology at Monmouth University. All right. So that's one. Another one that's interesting here: they strip away your self-esteem. Toxic partners like picking at you. If you hear criticizing statements on a regular basis, then that's a problem. I don't like that dress. Cut your hair. I don't like that. I don't like that hat even. Why are you wearing so much makeup? Why do you have to see your friends tonight? I thought you were going to stay home. I thought you were going to cook dinner tomorrow night and Saturday. I don't want to go out. I mean, these are just rare, you know, little examples, but people that are nitpicking at the smallest things and basically always nagging you about things that you really haven't done anything wrong. You're just trying to live your life, but they're always nitpicking at you and always kind of like stabbing you with that butter knife. Like, hey, you know, I want your attention and I want you to know that I'm not happy or pleased with anything that you're doing. There's a clear imbalance of power. Try asking yourself, who has more power in the relationship? If there is a clear-cut answer, it suggests a problem. Ideally, relationships are a union between equals. Surely every aspect of a relationship won't have perfectly balanced power dynamics, but overall, it should balance out. There should be even. There should be a little bit of give and take on both sides, you know? Sometimes, you know, just with myself and Elizabeth, there may be some things that she wants to do and things that she likes to do that maybe I'm not that excited about, but I will go ahead and I'll give in to some of that. And there's things that I want to do that I have interest in, or things that I need to partake in for my own personal well-being. And she will give in to that sometimes. So there's this balance, this little bit of give and take on both sides. And if you're not in a relationship that's giving and take, you know, letting people live their life and be who they are. And you have to give a little bit to allow that to happen. In other words, you have to sacrifice a little bit of what you maybe want to do at that moment, or what you want to do at that time, or what you don't, things that you don't really maybe care exactly so much for. Maybe your interest is a little bit lower than that, but you still have to give in and participate with that. And even be, not that you're being fake, but be excited that they're being, that it's making them happy. And there needs to be that kind of balance in a relationship. And if it's not there, there's a clear imbalance of power. Number four, they're controlling and excessively jealous. This is the problem that I had. I was in a situation like this. If your partner can't bear the thought of you not being by your side, you need to rethink that relationship. A partner who insists on being hyper close and doing everything together, or doesn't allow you to be by yourself, and is constantly monitoring or questioning your whereabouts and intentions, is indicative of a toxic relationship, says Dr. Lidowski. So, give an example for me. I was in a relationship where I had somebody who was hyper jealous. I mean, hyper. I'm talking about we're at a track meet. One of my daughters is in a track meet, and we're in an Olympic-sized track. And the away team is on the other side of the track, and I'm on the home team side. And she claimed that me and some lady on the opposite side of the track from the away team were having googly eyes together. And that turned into a whole big thing where she yelled and screamed and carried on. I had to leave the track meet. And so that's just, you know, one small example. But if you're in a situation like that, I'm telling you, without a doubt, that's not normal. A lot of people try to normalize this type of activity and go, oh, that person just really loves me. No, that person's really toxic is what they are. Another one here is you're not practicing self-care. That's really, really important. A toxic relationship is when you're not engaging in self-care. Self-care is vital in every relationship to keep toxicity out. So if you're neglecting yourself, basically, and you're not taking care of yourself and spending time with yourself, like I noticed Elizabeth, she wakes up in the morning, she has her ritual. Hey, I stay out of the way. She turns on her meditation tracks and her ebooks, which give her her Tao readings and everything else. She turns on her red light therapy machine. She gets in front of the red light. She does her meditations. Listen, I don't walk in the room and interrupt and start asking questions, start talking to her. I stay the hell out of that room as long as I can until she can get herself her time and her me time in. And, you know, and I think that's really important that we give people their personal space. If you're in a relationship where you can't even have a moment to yourself to work and focus on yourself and work on developing and thinking and deep thinking and thought meditation, whatever it is, prayer, whatever it is for you, that's a problem. OK. And I'll read one more, Liz, and then I'll let you elaborate on some of these other ones. I'm going to pop it over to you. You keep waiting and hoping for them to change. A lot of the bad behaviors that make relationships toxic would be deal breakers for healthy, functional relationships. For a relationship to be toxic, not only does it require toxic behavior from one partner, but also willingness to stay in the relationship, which we just touched on that. You know, so it's a two-sided thing. OK, and so it's you're hoping for somebody to change. You're hanging on. At some point, maybe you have to realize, like, maybe this person is not going, after you've gone through everything you could possibly do, therapy, whatever the case may be. Once you realize that you come to that point, you may realize that you're in a toxic relationship. And what I want to do, Elizabeth, is that was number six. I'm going to drop this link over to you so you can go over some of these as well. You'll have it in your email here in one quick second.
Well, I can touch on just specifically the, tearing down your self-esteem. I'm still building my self-esteem back up from my relationship. Wow. And that was, we broke up back in the beginning of 2019. Mm-hmm. And I'm still working on my self-esteem. He tore my self-esteem all the way down for 4 straight years because he was nitpicking at me all the time. And it's very, even those little nitpicks, those tiny little, your hair looks whack like that. Why did you dye your hair like that? That looks stupid. You look stupid. Mm. All these little tiny little comments, you know, will add up over time and really tear you down. Like, I didn't realize how much it was affecting me until it was over. Mm. And I was like, wow, I'm not myself. You know, I used to be, you know, I was a model and actress. I was on spreads of magazines and magazine covers and stuff. And I went from that to thinking that I'm the ugliest, nastiest, just grossest person in the world. Like, you know, that I had to do affirmations in the mirror for days straight just so I could get some self-esteem back. I had to face it. You know, I had to stand naked in the mirror like, you know, you're brilliant, you're beautiful, you're all these things just so I could build a little bit back up after after 4 years of just being nitpicked. And it wasn't even like straight, just emotional abuse. It wasn't like, you know, it was these tiny little, you know, well, that looks pretty whack on you. Oh, your nails look stupid today. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, it's just these tiny little things that really compile over time that will tear you apart. Yeah. And I don't know how you did it for 25 years straight, but it takes, you know, strong skin. But I think that you kind of had a different intention. So you knew what was kind of going on within your relationship, but your intent was to be there for the kids. So it wasn't like your brain was really wrapped into that situation. It was more so you had your intention. You knew that this person was a little crazy, but you had to deal with what you had to deal with because you wanted to do what's best for your kids.
Yeah, I knew that if I would have left those kids in that situation, they would have all turned out drug addicts and everything else. And so I just spent my impregnant, you know, and I did pretty good because my oldest son, who's now 31, his girl didn't have any kids. And he was 29 when she got pregnant. April, my oldest daughter, she just had her first baby a year ago. She's now 29. Or she's 30 now. She's 30 now. Bobby just got pregnant at 28, had a baby, right? And she's going to be 29 this year. Giovanni has no kids and Justin has no kids and they're both grown men. So, you know, I knew that if I would have abandoned that situation, though, it would have been the only path to follow would have been the person they were only, you know, looking at. And I knew that was going to be a nightmare. So I just dove into the kids and I spent as much time as I possibly could. I created sports programs in my neighborhood just for them to play in. I volunteered at all their schools, elementary all the way up to high school. I was there at every turn. Everywhere they turned, they saw my face. They couldn't get away from me. Mm-hmm. And luckily for me, they didn't mind. It wasn't like an harassment to them. They were like, oh, this is great. Dad's here all the time. I spent so much time with those kids. I told their mother that if she literally spent every waking minute for the rest of her life, she wouldn't catch up to the amount of time that I put in. So, I did my job on that regard. But that was right. I dove into that. That was my escape. The kids were my escape. And I would take them on travel, basketball and sports all over the country and stuff like that. That was my escape. I would just get away, you know. And then when I was home, I would just work almost 24 hours. I would never leave my office. I'd just stay in the office and work as long as I possibly could, you know. But that's not really a good way to live. Now, I got through it and I did it. But, you know, in hindsight, looking back, yes, it helped me develop a lot of the talents and skills that I have today. Because it gave me countless hours of time to research and study and read books and stuff. But at the same time, I would have liked to have some sort of happiness, you know, during those years. That was a pretty long time to suffer, you know what I mean? But I primarily just, like I said, I did it for the kids. I wanted to see them all, you know, become young adults. And once they were young adults, then I went on ahead and moved on.
So your takeaway from that relationship was your kids being successful and great, you know, so that takeaway is great and beneficial and amazing.
Yeah.
You know, did you have any negative side effects from that relationship?
I do. And I still
PTSD?
Do.
PTSD?
I have a little PTSD. I'm not going to lie. It's still in there. If I were to tell you that I didn't, I'd be lying to you. I don't think anybody can walk away from that many years without some kind of trauma. You know, from time to time, you get nervous. Sometimes I find myself maybe trying to watch what I'm going to say and then try to figure out if it's going to be a good thing or a bad thing. I'm like, why am I doing this? Everything's okay. I don't even have to do this. But you find yourself with a little PTSD, you know, being careful and cautious sometimes for no reason. And so it's just like, wow, I really had a long-term effect on me. And it's taking a lot of years, you know, for me just to get to this point. And that 25 years also was detrimental for me for relationships that came right after that, you know. So part of that PTSD, part of that trauma that I was suffering from, it kind of helped some of the other ones not work out as well, you know. So these things can have a long lasting effect on you.
It always has a long-lasting effect on you. And it's for this, the inner work and the awareness to really become conscious of when you're in those moments. Having that PTSD, I mean, I get scared all the time. You know, like I get real nervous. And if you find yourself apologizing all the time, you're probably in an abusive relationship. You know, you're probably in a toxic relationship because I'm so sorry. Oh, my hair's in the ground. I'm so sorry. Oh my God, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to make that noise. Oh my God, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to say that. I'm so sorry. I didn't mean, you know, I was apologizing probably more than 200 times a day.
Ooh-wee.
So yeah. I mean, you're always apologizing.
And I believe it because I remember one time you had some hair on the floor in the bathroom. It was like your first time or second time over. And I was like, and you were like, I'm so sorry. I got hair on the floor. And I'm like, okay, no big deal. We'll clean it up. What's going on? You were so panicked. I was like, why is she panicking like this over a couple strands of hair?
Yo, that used to be a fight like no other. He used to yell at me so bad about my hair. Wow. And you know, I can't control it. I'm sorry. I would get a little Swiffer, you know, and just follow myself around the house. But you know what? I mean, honestly, that relationship, it taught me a lot about myself, and it actually brought more awareness into our relationship because now it's so interesting. I'm very connected with my body. So I listen to the signals that my physical body give me at all times. Mm-hmm. And you'll say something completely calm to me, like, hey, you know, move your head back real quick so I can see, you know, that right there, my heart will be like, oh my God, I'm sorry.
Oh man.
Backwards, that, you know, these little things that used to spark and trigger huge, gigantic fights, you know, and you have that in your physical body, in your mind. So you bring that into your other relationships, even though you consciously don't want to, but your body reacts no matter what. You know, your body is going to react to the outer stimulus no matter what. And then that's what the work is about. That's what removing the trauma, you know, and processing these things, you know, within your mind and your mental and your physical body is so important. Yeah. So you don't react these ways for no reason. You know, my body stresses out sometimes for no reason because you don't be tripping on me like that.
No, I'd be like, don't worry. We got maids. They're going to clean up everything. You ain't got to worry about the dishes. I'd be like, don't wash the dishes. Don't do nothing. Just relax. Calm down. Yeah. So, but you know, little by little, you've gotten a lot better. I can see that, you turned the awareness to it, and I'm reassuring you everything is okay, and I've seen the changes. You know,
well, that's what's important too in a healthy relationship is kind of seeing where your partner has those triggers and those traumatic. I mean, I've seen your PTSD before multiple times, and I try to calm that down when I see it happening because I know that it's not so when you pull the speck out on a relationship, you are in a relationship for a reason, right? Because you care and love that person. So your goal is the same, right? Both of your goals is the same if you're in a healthy relationship. So when there are triggers and trauma and things coming up that you guys have disagreements about, it's just becoming aware and present in those moments, knowing that the end goal is still the same. You know, you guys care and love each other, even if you have disagreements, even if you have PTSD that's sparking you, pushing you into fight or flight. Now you're reactive, you know, you're not thinking very consciously, but it's in those moments that are so powerful to stay spiritual. It's such a spiritual practice to be able to stay conscious when you're triggered like that.
Yeah,
it's very, very difficult.
It is. Yeah. But it is. I mean, you've seen me. I mean, if I get telemarketing calls, that's one of my biggest triggers, telemarketing calls.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just, you know, but it's good to have somebody by your side that's reassuring, that tries to calm you down, that, you know, that's there to that can understand the situation where your mind is going and reel you back in, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that also stems from, you know, 0 to 7 when you're a kid and how your parents have raised you. Attachment styles, you know, if your parents were very standoffish and didn't pay you too much attention, you know, they didn't, you know, help your emotional needs at those times, you probably have an avoidant attachment style, which makes you a little bit more narcissistic, which makes you standoffish. You know, it's these different things in psychology that really make you act certain ways with different people within relationships, whether that be a boyfriend, girlfriend, husband, wife, or even a friend, you know, even a child. Like these different attachment styles can really, really play a part in whatever relationship you're trying to, you know, grow. So it's important to understand your partner's attachment style as well, and to reassure that attachment style, because attachment styles can change within a relationship depending on how you treat that person. Yeah. If you're very reassuring, you're very reassuring for me. So it's helped my anxious attachment style become more secure. So now I feel like my attachment style is pretty secure because you've reassured me so much that I don't have to be freaking out all the time, you know,
right.
from previous trauma. So,
yeah. And what's interesting, what you're talking about right now on that link that I sent you from Women's Health, a psychotherapist named Rebecca Hendricks says, this is so crazy that we were just talking about the hair. She says, if your partner is telling you to pick up the wet towels and it ends in a fight every time, and then you're dealing in a toxic relationship, that's too funny, because that's the same thing as hair or anything else, you know, socks on the floor or whatever the case may be. But it's pretty interesting that a psychotherapist is literally saying the same exact thing. You know, everything can't end in a fight. That's a bad sign. Yeah. That's a really, really bad sign.
Here's how skewed. So this is a part of self-love and self-worth and really growing into you know, your highest being, your highest vibrational being, is realizing, you know, when I was in that 4-year relationship, I didn't really have much self-love at all because I allowed all of it to happen, number one. And here's how skewed my perception was. I literally thought that this was the perfect relationship for me because he was loyal, and because he didn't beat me, you know, because he wasn't beating my ass every day. So I was like, wow, this is good. I'm going to stay in this, even though we fight and argue and he's mean to me all the time. I can deal with an asshole if he's loyal to me, you know, and he doesn't beat me. So that's where my brain was during that time. And that's just it just shows that I had no real self-worth, no self-love, because I allowed all of that behavior, you know. Right. And thank God, I mean, at the end of it, I found out he was cheating the whole time. So that was my ticket out. Thank God.
Yeah. Goodness. Yeah. That's crazy. And that's, you know, but it's part of the process.
Yeah.
You know, and one of the things too, you got to understand that, and this psychotherapist is talking about this as well. Having a disagreement with your partner is not toxic. Even if it turns into a small argument, it's kind of normal. That's actually normal that it will happen every now and then. It shouldn't happen all the time. But if the person that you're bringing up your concerns to is doing something that they call stonewalling, in other words, stops listening, blocks you out, unresponsive, walks away during the most important part of the conversation, doesn't want to try to figure out a solution to the problem, then that may be toxic. If that's the situation that occurs every single time, then you may be in a toxic situation as well. So stonewalling is another sign that you're in a toxic relationship.
Yep. So your partner should always be open to hearing how you feel, because no feeling is wrong. There's no feeling that is wrong. You're entitled to the way that you feel. Everybody has emotions. And if your partner wants to come to you with their feelings, open and honestly, then you should be open to hear that person out no matter what.
Yeah.
I mean, if you supposedly care about your partner, then you should always be open to the way that they're feeling. And if they want to talk something out and work something out with you and you don't feel like it, doesn't really matter. You know, they're your partner.
Yeah.
Be open to hearing their feelings, to hearing, you know, or else it'll just build resentment and it'll shut the person down.
Right. It's real important. And if you are in a situation where maybe you just feel like you don't want to be bothered by this person's complaint or issue, and you dismiss them, bring your attention to yourself, realize what you just did, and then get up from wherever you are or go back and readdress the situation, apologize, readdress the situation, and sit down and just listen to what they have to say. Listen with, you know, a real ear, not a fake ear, a real ear. And then listen for the signs. Are they looking for a solution, or did they just need somebody to talk to? Sometimes people aren't looking for a solution. They just want somebody to talk to that they can trust with the information and they can vent with, and they can talk about their, you know, whatever it is. And so sometimes they want a solution. Sometimes they want help, or they want you to give a little bit from your end on whatever the situation is. But catch yourself if you've dismissed someone, if you dismissed your partner, catch yourself after everybody's cooled off a little bit. Go back and readdress the situation as adults and earnestly listen to that person's needs, wants, situation, and see then from there if they're looking for just a person to listen to them, or do they need your help and assistance in correcting the problem, whatever the case may be. But be assertive in correcting yourself. Don't dismiss your partner and think everything is going to be fine, because it's not. I guarantee you that's not going to be, that's not going to end up well long term. That stays inside of a person forever. So you have to go back and readdress the situation.
Yep. And resentment causes a lot of issues within relationships.
Sex, bad sex. Yeah, if you're trying to, if you're wondering why your woman is not having any orgasms, it could be a lot of resentment from you not paying attention to her needs, not listening to her, dismissing her when she has complaints or issues that she's trying to bring up to you, and you're just dismissing everything. And then you guys go to bed to have sex, and you know, and she starts faking all these orgasms because she ain't really into it, because you know, all that resentment's built up inside. She can't even get to that point in her brain and her body to even allow that to happen. And you think you're doing something. You ain't doing nothing.
Yeah. An orgasm for a woman is complete surrendering, so, you know, surrender to her partner. And a woman is not going to surrender, and she will start faking.
That's
and
right.
And have a fake ass sex life.
Yeah.
Fake.
That's right. Fake.
And then after so much resentment has been built up within that woman, you'll roll over one day and think, or man, like you'll roll over one day and hate the other person and not even know where it came from. Mm-hmm. It can turn from love to hate real quick. If you allow all that resentment into your relationship, mm-hmm. you will literally within minutes, it can happen with minutes. This has happened to me. My relationships in the past, all of them have ended mm-hmm. this way.
Yeah.
And they didn't know anything was wrong. They thought everything was perfect, you know, but I just woke up and I was like, oh, I hate you. Bye. But that's because of resentment, because I was not allowed to speak my truth throughout those mm-hmm. relationships. I held everything yeah. in. I was not allowed to, you know, you should feel safe to be able to go to your partner with anything. I mean, that's your person, you know, mm-hmm. you should feel safe to approach them with your deepest, darkest, everything and feel like you'll be received by that person, or else right. what are you doing?
Exactly. And that's something we all need to work on a consistent basis, but it's important. It's one of the most important parts of being in a relationship. You know, when you travel with somebody too, it's like you only have you and that person. There's nowhere, there's nobody to go for them to cry a shoulder on somewhere else. It's just you and that person. And you have to, you know, if me and Elizabeth are somewhere in some foreign country walking through the jungle somewhere and she's got some issues and problems, I got to be attentive. There's nowhere for us to go. You know, you have to really pay attention. And yeah, kind of leads us to the next one, really, is if you feel worse than better when you're with that person, then you have a real problem. In other words, if you're feeling happy and fine and great when you're at work or you're out with your friends or you're doing your hobby or you're spending time with the kids, when that other person is not around, and then as soon as that person shows up, you feel worse emotionally, physically, your physiology changes, then you're in a serious toxic relationship. You should never feel like your physiology has gone towards the worse when your partner shows up. If that happens, then you're in a situation that most likely is toxic.
Mm. You know? There was a time in my last relationship where I remember I got so conscious. I was getting yelled at and I got so conscious and I started talking to myself in my head like, you know, do you want to feel this way? I was feeling so crappy. My insides were literally feeling empty and just like they were falling through the ground. It was just awful. It was mm-hmm. awful the way I was feeling. And I was talking to myself, remember and hold on to this feeling, because one day you're going to have the strength to leave. Mm-hmm. One of these days you're going to have the strength and you will leave this mofo, because mm-hmm. this feeling right here is yeah. not what I want to carry through the rest of my life.
Wow. Yeah.
That was a turning point in my relationship.
Nice. Nice.
I was on my way out.
Yeah, that's how it works. You know, if you really begin to wake up to what's happening. if the person doesn't bring out the best in you, that's another sign. So if, you know, if the best, you know, the best you could be is someone who is really confident. And if you're with somebody who takes away your confidence, then that's a real, real problem. If they take away your happiness, if they if they're always putting you down and basically shunning your accomplishments. I was in a situation like that where my partner actually told me that she was jealous of me. And I was like, my achievements are your achievements. What are you even, why would you, we're not in competition. Like, we're in it together. And she would, you know, do things to try to undermine what I was doing and tell me that she was actually jealous of my accomplishments. And that's why she does it. That's her exact words out of her mouth. And I was like, why though? Like, we're in two totally different fields. You're doing your thing. I'm doing my thing. Why would you be jealous of my accomplishments? And so right there, I realized that was my red flag that made me really, truly realize that once I heard that, I knew that this thing couldn't last forever. Because once somebody has that type of emotion towards you, and I'm only on the way up, I'm on a rocket ship, right? I'm headed to a whole nother galaxy. I said, I knew this would never work out because I got somebody standing in my shadow that's jealous of my every move and success. I can't even celebrate a good, I would start hiding things that would happen. I would like want to celebrate a dinner for an achievement and I wouldn't even be able to do it. I would want to, you know, have a celebration or announce something that big that just happened to me and I'd have to cover it up and hide it, you know? And then that person would find out like 3 weeks or a month later and like, why didn't you tell me? I'm like, you know, just, you know, it's no big deal. I have to underplay it, you know what I'm saying? Because I didn't want to go through the drama. So it's just crazy.
That's sad. I mean, your partner's supposed to be your number one fan.
Exactly.
You know, that's really just shows emptiness within their own self and their own, you know, their own feeling of not being good enough. You know, that really is their projection onto you, which is really sad, to be honest, because your partner, you know, I mean, you're supposed to be your number one fan. You know, I'm your number one fan. You know? I'm your cheerleader holding my pom-poms.
Listen, you know, I'm a cheerleader. And that's the way it's supposed to be, you know? Yeah. And if I'm not going to be your cheerleader, then somebody else damn sure is 24/7. You know, A-Rab's at the corner store. They're going to cheer you right on up as soon as you walk in there, you know? Everywhere you go, you're going to have a cheerleader everywhere you go. So why am I going to let all these guys be a cheerleader for you and I'm not your cheerleader? That's ridiculous. That's absolutely ridiculous. And that caused a lot of resentment.
You. I'm your number one cheerleader and I will be that. Okay. Yeah,
I know. But that causes a lot of resentment when, you know, when your other half doesn't support you in those kind of ways and everywhere you go, you're getting all this attention, but you don't get it in your own home. It's almost like mundane and blah at home. But when you go out, you're getting all this attention. So, you know, man, that's just wild. And it really builds up a very gradual, slow resentment. It builds up, you know, like, wow, this person don't really care about me like that, you know? Mm-hmm. And of course, the people in the street, they don't even really know you. They're just attracted to you or whatever the case may be. But at the same time, it's still some form of energy exchange there. They're giving their energy out. And sometimes it helps self-esteem. And when you're not getting any self-esteem boost at home, you're supposed to have your own self-esteem, but you still want your better half to be like, you look beautiful today. Oh, that looks nice on you. Or, you know, just I love you. Whatever it is. Now, you're not getting that at home at all. Then it's like, man, what am I even in this for? You know what I'm saying? Like, what am I here for?
Well, especially if your love language is affirmation. If that's high up on words of affirmation, if that's high up on your love language, then, you know, it's very important for your partner to always be, you know, voicing their compliments and voicing the way they feel and voicing these things, because that's how you receive love. So if you're receiving love outside of your home from everybody else, you know, from these affirmations, from these people using these words, and you're not receiving it at home, I mean, it does create resentment and it definitely, I mean, it would make, for me, for instance, that's my highest, you know, love language. So if I'm not receiving that at home, then I don't feel like I'm loved, you know, even though I consciously know that's not the case, but you know, I mean, it's just know your partner's love language.
Exactly. We did a whole show on that too.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah. Yeah. Another one is if they don't bring out the best in you, then you're probably in a toxic relationship. If the person you're with doesn't bring out the best, they're always bringing out the worst. They're always causing you to feel anguish, pain, hurt, depressed, unworthy. Then those are real heavy, heavy red flags that are showing that you're probably in a toxic relationship. You know, another one is if you don't have any positive feelings about the future, if you've kind of given up hope on the future, if you're just kind of living like moment to moment, don't know what's going to happen next, don't know what's going to happen when he or she walks in here today. I don't even want to go home tonight. I've been in a situation where I didn't even want to go home. I would stay out as long as I possibly could because I didn't want to come home to the drama and the trauma. And so I've been in that kind of situation. If you've got, and I just remember thinking, man, how long do I got to live like this? So when your hopes of a bright future start to fade, you're in a toxic relationship. You know, really are.
Or, I mean, that could be both ways. You could be in a toxic relationship, or you could just, you know, it could just not be for you anymore. You know, if it fades, if your future, you know, projection fades. I mean, it doesn't have to necessarily be abusive or toxic. It could just be you guys are growing apart, you know.
But, well, that happens too. You could grow apart. That's a very good point too. You could grow apart. In my situation, it was toxic, and my hopes of the future were completely squashed in terms of, you know, not my future as my personal success, because for me, that's always guaranteed because I'm always going to do what I got to do to survive and build. But for relationship wise, I just knew that the future there was bleak. And once I realized that, it really every day it was like I was, you know, a prisoner drawing lines on a wall. I think that 5 more days have went by, another 5. It was wild, man. It was really rough. You know, and for me, that was a red flag. And I knew at that moment that I had to start making plans for myself for the future, which mm-hmm. is what I did, you know.
Yep. I was in one relationship and we just grew apart because I was growing, you know, internally, and he was not. So, I mean, it just, you know, the growth got real, real far apart, and it wasn't toxic. It was just, you know, we just grew apart because I was growing mentally. And if you're in a relationship, a healthy relationship, you guys should be growing together always. Yeah. It can be uneven, you know, but you guys should always be working your way up together, because your partner shouldn't want you to be stagnant. You know, your partner should push you to be the best you that you could possibly be.
Yes, so, absolutely. Mm-hmm. That's the goal. That's the absolute goal. And it's ironic that I had mentioned earlier about what I went through with the competition situation and the person being jealous of me. Because this same psychotherapist, I was just scrolling down at the very bottom, it says your other half is super competitive with you, and having a challenge with you consistently, really just jealous of your achievements. Pretty interesting. Mm-hmm. But that's, you know, that's exactly what I lived through. That was wild. But also, if they're always blaming their other people for their problems.
Mm-hmm. And, that's a kind of narcissist.
Ooh, that's a narcissist. Oh, wow. Ooh, that's everybody else is the reason why this happened. Everybody else is the reason why I'm doing this. Everybody, it's never them. They never look in the mirror. When they look in the mirror, they don't even see a reflection. Like, they can't even see themselves in the mirror. It's the mirror is blank. They don't never look at themselves for anything. And it's always an outside source is the reason why. And it's a point of finger situation. And man, that's just, again, that's a real toxic situation.
Yeah, that's a toxic human. That's a toxic being. Stay away from those type of people. Oh, God. Everything else is everybody else's fault.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they're steady screwing up and blaming everybody. I mean, everybody. Mm-hmm. I won't name any situations in particular, but you know, one that recently happened about 4 or 5 months ago. You know, it was crazy. She was blaming everybody and everything for the situation that she herself did. Which caused a major financial issue for somebody that we know, and you know, got their whole tax return sucked up because of something that she did, and was blaming the whole world for it. But no, you the one that did that. You did that. You know, yeah. Even when the evidence is in black and white on a piece of paper, they still want to blame somebody else.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just crazy. It's just crazy. Okay.
That just shows how far away from how powerful that person really could be, because that's the opposite end. That's the polar opposite of knowing that you have the power and you create this life. You project your own life. That's it. It's you. It's you. Yeah. So, I mean, that's the other side of that. You know, I mean, that's polar opposites.
Yeah. I mean, you touched on the abusive part of the relationship. But also another one is if you feel like you're doing all the work in the relationship, if you're doing all the work, if you feel like that, you know, you need to analyze it and see maybe if that's the case, or are you just, are you thinking too hard? But if you feel like you're doing everything to keep the whole thing together, you know, that's I was in a situation like that. We went to therapy. I begged, I had to drag her into therapy, you know, and only did one session. After that, she would never go back again. Even the therapist said, "You need to leave her." I was like, damn, this one's going down the tubes. Yeah. But, you know, and it's not like I'm perfect. I'm not perfect, guys. I'm not, by no means am I perfect. I screw up too, and I have my own little shortcomings as well. So I don't want to make it sound like I'm talking about everybody was bad and I was all good. It goes both ways. There's give and take in all relationships, and I'm not by no means am I an angel at all. But what I'm saying is, in some situations, I've experienced some of these things that we're talking about today.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, my biggest problem is I spend a lot of time working. I had to find someone that worked a lot, like I work a lot. You know, luckily I found Elizabeth. I work all the time, and she understands that I have to work all the time. But she also works a lot too. So, yeah, you know, and so that helps a lot because I'm with somebody that understands my plight. In other words, I've been in relationships with people that, boy, they get after the first couple of weeks. I mean, they're toast. They're like, "Look, I'm done. Like, you know, you're working too much." And I'm like, "I know, but this is what I do." You know what I'm saying? And I still find a way to I find creative ways to do my quality time and to have fun and things like that. But the person that's with me has got to understand that I have a high demand duty in what I do for a living. And it's a lot. I can wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning, 4 o'clock in the morning, get on a computer and work until 7 o'clock the next night. You know, it is what it is. You have to be with people that kind of understand how you are, how you move in certain areas that probably aren't going to change that much. And then that person needs to be kind of understanding for that, or me at least on that same frequency, you know? So yeah, that helps.
Well, I'm a workaholic, so I work too much, but what is too much? You know, yeah. I love to work, and it works for us because we'll have our quality time, you know, while we're working too. I mean, we have our one-on-one, and then we also, you know, be in these beautiful places and we work a lot, and I don't mind. It's the best place to work.
The best.
All over the world.
Nothing like sitting overlooking some foreign ocean or sea with the laptop up and just dialing away and doing what we do, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's one of the benefits of being able to be your own boss and work for yourself and control your own destiny. Mm-hmm. You know, and so, but when we go, we work. Like, we've been all over the world, and some of them have been actual vacations, but we still work.
Yeah. We were in the Maldives working all night long this one night.
But we had fun, you know?
We did. It was awesome.
Yeah, we enjoyed it. So I found somebody that can do what I do, that can keep up with me in that regard. And that's why I'm with Elizabeth, because not just because of that, but that's a huge thing for me. Like, I can't be getting nagged 24/7, you know? How come you're on this computer? How come you're doing that? How come you're doing this? How come you're going here? How come you're flying there? I can't be with somebody like that. I've been in that situation before. That's a dead end relationship, you know?
Yeah. You just have to find someone that understands your lifestyle, accepts your lifestyle, and honestly accepts you for who you are and doesn't try to change you. I mean, that's what a lot of people go into relationships thinking, that they have this false thing that they can go in and change this person and to conform to be exactly what they want them to be. And that is the absolute wrong way of entering into something with somebody else, because you will never change that person. You might enhance or you know, drop some seeds to where that person may have some realizations and want to change themselves, but you will never, ever change another person. They have to do that and want to do that on their own. So you have to, you know, in these relationships, you have to come from a place of zero judgment and accept the person exactly as they are, exactly as they are. And I knew who you were after getting to know you for a couple of weeks. I knew who you were, and right. I accept who you are, and I enjoy who you are. So it works.
Yeah. And I enjoy who you are. And You know, you put in the time, the energy, and but we, like you say, we have fun doing it. Mm-hmm. But it's the kind of fun that we understand. You know, the average person is not going to understand this as fun.
Right.
You know, like we both take joy in seeing businesses grow, develop, seeing new ideas kind of manifest and then grow to fruition, and see them prosper and grab legs and take off. We enjoy that. For us, that's like, man, this is great, right? These challenges. Yeah. Yes. But to other people, they just see it as just mundane work. And, you know, they want to punch out in 8 hours. They only want to do the 8 hours. And exactly when that 8 hour hit, they want to punch out. And then they want to go do their thing. And that's okay. That's them. But we're different than that. We do things a little differently. So you have to really understand what your person likes and dislikes. And you got to be willing to ask yourself deeply, can I live with this forever? Mm-hmm. If the answer is no, then don't even waste that person's time. You know?
Yeah.
I had a person that told me that they thought they can handle this. And you know, but it turns out that they couldn't. They talked themselves into it. Oh, I can make. No, you can't. You got to know, like, can you live like this for 20, 30 years or whatever, you know, the time frame is? Can you do it? And if if the answer is no, I don't think I could do this. This is tiring. I just can't. There's no way. Then you got to let the other person know, like, look, this is not the lifestyle that I could see myself doing long term. This isn't really for me. You know, I think you're a great person or whatever, whatever. But this thing, because if you don't, it's going to turn into arguments, resentment, you know, hatred and separation and all these other kind of crazy things are going to pop up. And then it's going to be a nightmare of a situation when it didn't even have to be. Just talk. Just say, look.
Well, that's leading somebody into a dead road. And that's really wrong. That's one of the most wrong things that you could do in a relationship or to somebody, is lead them to believe that, you know, you guys have a goal of being together forever. And then, you know, in the back of your head, okay, I can't handle this.
Yeah.
And I don't think that I want to be with this person forever. But yet the other person is thinking completely different. I mean, that's heartbreaking. You don't do that to people. That's wrong. So understand and know your deal breakers, and talk about your deal breakers too at the beginning of your relationship. So you're not leading someone down a path of you know, the empty road. Because at the end of the day, you're just wasting that person's time, and that's wrong. Mm-hmm. It is okay to let go.
That's right. It's okay to let go. Mm-hmm. Listen, don't waste my time. You know, time is valuable.
Time is everything. Time is everything. All we have in this third dimension. That's what this whole life is about. Your time. Yeah. How do you spend your time in this third dimension?
Right. Exactly. And I just don't have the time to waste, especially now. You know, it's just like this. The mission that we're both on is so crucial. It's a crucial mission, and it requires a lot of us. And we, you know, and we just don't have the time to play games and just waste.
Don't
have. Yeah.
I mean, nobody really does. You know, we want to maximize all of our moments on this planet. Life is too short. You want to have enjoyable moments with people that you care about and love and connect with. That's what this life is about. Yeah. Connection, enjoyable moments, memories with those people. Mm-hmm. You know, you want to be and live your best life. Your days are your life in miniature. They're your days in miniature. So make sure that every day that you're living, that it's pleasant and happy. And you're grateful and surrounding yourself with the people that you want to be around.
Yep. You know,
I mean, it's too short to live miserably, you know?
Exactly. Exactly. So this has been a great talk. I want to definitely show them the flyer that you have for Sunday's event.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And if you can drop the link in the chat, I'll share my screen as well. And we will show them the event we have. It's a free event this weekend online, virtual. Okay, we're going to teach you how to reclaim your power. It's a guided quantum shift experience with Anton Wibiski. We're going to do a free guided 1.5 hour meditation. It's going to be a Biohack Your Best Life exclusive podcast with Anton Wibiski. A special event Sunday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Elizabeth is dropping the link in the chat right now. Okay. You don't want to miss this event. It's going to be amazing. And it's going to be a fully guided, an hour and a half meditation Sunday evening. But it's not just a meditation, it's a breath work session. If you don't know what a breathwork session is, we did one just the other day on Instagram, I think, in YouTube as well, for 15 minutes, I think it was only.
We're actually going live tomorrow at 8 p.m. on Instagram, and he'll probably do a quick little 5 minute or something just to give you guys a little preview.
Yeah, it's incredible. I've done 3 hours with Anton before, a 3 hour breathwork session with Anton, a private 3 hour breathwork session. And I'm going to tell you right now, it was the most incredible thing. One of the most incredible things I've ever done in my life. It's a life changing thing. It's what changed his life. Someone did a breathwork meditation with him.
It was Joe Dispenza.
Okay. So he did it with Joe. So Joe Dispenza did it with him. It altered his complete trajectory in life and changed him and made him who he is now. Or it didn't change him. It allowed him to discover who he was.
He activated his chakras. He had a Kundalini awakening.
Yes. He had a Kundalini awakening and discovered who he truly was, his true power. He claimed his true power. And now he's teaching this to other people and has been doing it for years. Mm-hmm. He's a phenomenal individual. I've known him for now 4 years. And Elizabeth, you've known him longer than me. It's just ironic. It's a small world.
I know. It's such a small world. I knew him back before his awakening, and he was a different person.
Wow.
Completely different.
Yeah.
He says that he guides these breathwork meditations all the time, and he sees people waking up, you know, becoming enlightened all the time, having crazy experiences all the time.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
really looking forward to it.
Really incredible. Yeah. So we're looking forward to that. That'll be this Sunday. You dropped the link in the chat.
Yes, I did.
Right. So you guys can register for that event. It's free. And so you got no excuse. All it takes is some time and some energy. That's it. And some willingness to be vulnerable and allow the universe to fill you up and learn the breathwork techniques. By the way, these are ancient techniques. This isn't some new age stuff he made up off the top of his head. Mm-hmm. This stuff was done from ancient times, deep antiquity. So these are ancient techniques that are being retaught to us now in this current era. Okay. So that's going to be amazing.
Yeah. It might be life changing, you guys, just some time and energy.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So I wanted to acknowledge this one comment I saw a while back. Mark Click. He was telling me that my book is incredible. Thank you so much. And he said, you know, I don't know if you've already done it, but it would be awesome if there was a live discussing it. So maybe the next podcast that we do live, we can talk specifically about the book and what's in it. There's a lot of information. Yeah. I'm so happy at this point because I was freaking out a couple weeks ago because I didn't have any feedback from anybody. Yeah. But now that people have gotten their books and read it, I've gotten so much positive feedback. So I feel way better about it.
your book is amazing. But it's me telling you. I mean, the book is it's incredible. It's going to heal a lot of people. It's going to help a lot of people heal themselves, I should say. Yeah. It's going to help people heal themselves. And so when you have something that is that powerful, it's going to affect millions of people. Literally, that's what it's going to do. So what your work you put into that is going to literally help change the lives of millions of people on this planet, which is absolutely incredible.
Yes.
So Richard Merritt's calling me now for this next podcast. I got to hop on.
Oh yeah, you got to go live again, huh?
Yeah, I'm going live with Richard Merritt soon. Rich, you there? Okay, I'm going to have to hit you right back when I get off this podcast. I'm on a live podcast.
Okay.
All right, cool.
Glad that you enjoyed it, Mark. That's amazing. I was a little worried about sharing everything that I did, but I'm kind of glad that I did share all that because I wanted people to be able to, you know, see and just compare their lives with mine. So that's why I put all the drama and trauma in it.
You did. Yeah, absolutely. Wow. And by the way, a couple quick things before we exit. The first thing is I am going to be speaking. I'm doing a TED Talk.
Yes.
And it's coming up April 17th. Mm-hmm. It's in Miami at the Olympia Theater. Mm-hmm. You have to go register online. I'll get you the link to it real quick and drop it in the chat. Okay. And it's a TED Talk. It's going to be in Miami. It's going to be free. Okay. You guys we're giving you guys a lot of free stuff this year.
Yeah.
If you want to come to the TED Talk in Miami, the event is free to enter. All right. I'm dropping a link in the chat right now. You have to sign up. You can't just show up at the theater. You have to register on that site first. It's on Eventbrite through that link, and then come there with your tickets. Even though the tickets don't cost any money, you have to register. You can't just walk up to the Olympia Theater and walk in, okay? Just so you know.
And the title of yours is The Secret of How to Manifest a Stress-Free Life.
So. That's going to be my talk topic, guys. That's going to be my talk. I've been trying to get on TED Talk for 3 years. It's my first opportunity to get on TED Talk. So I'm chomping at the bit. I really can't wait to get down there because, you know, I love speaking live. I mean, before this whole thing went around the planet and had everybody staying at home, I was only in person. I love speaking in person. I've been doing it since I was young. I love the crowd. I love to see the people in front of me. I love to see the eye, make the eye contact and get feel the energy from the crowd. I just love that. That's my thing. I just love it. I never, ever, ever had butterflies or nervousness or anything like that. I always just love talking in front of people. So I'm looking forward to it. You know, this is going to be a phenomenal day, phenomenal night. So that'll be in Miami. Follow that link and you'll get a chance to come down there and see me. Also, don't forget, we are in round two of the shares.
I just dropped the link.
Yeah, you did. Okay. It's only 63 days left now.
Yeah.
In round two. Now, people were waiting around in round one and waited and waited and waited. And the shares went from $1 to $1.50.
Yeah, so, your investment grew by 50%.
Right.
That's an amazing growth. That's an amazing percentage within a couple weeks. So
it was 90 days.
Yeah, 90 days.
Yeah.
We've been in contact with a couple more people too about some exciting new things. So I think that the pace that we're moving is way quicker than what we had originally expected.
Yeah.
So get in now, guys, because it's been we've had some great conversations in the past week and a half. So.
Powerful conversations. We're in the process of taking care of some serious things. And I know that once we get everything all in alignment, a lot of great, 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 great things are getting ready to pop. I'm so excited. I wish I could just, but I got to wait. But man, it's going to be massive. It's
super. I know it is. It's going to be great. So make sure you guys getting ready to fit in. It's happening.
Guys, get your shares. They're only $1.50 a share. Make sure you get your shares ASAP. That's all I can tell you. We're on a rocket ship. We're on a rocket ship right now. We're on a rocket ship. And it's got hyperspace on it, too. So it's going to bypass galaxies. It's just crazy.
We're
excited about that. But guys, I got to hop on with Richard Merritt. Richard Merritt just got a MetaMask because he wants to buy one of my NFTs and he needs help linking it to my website so he can buy the NFT. And then I'm going to be live on Black Magic right after this at 9:30 Eastern time on Black Magic 363 YouTube account talking about NFTs. So I'll be over there talking shortly in about 15 minutes. But this was another great talk tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you guys for tapping in. There's one question that it's a good question real quick.
Mm-hmm.
How does one heal after recognizing a toxic partner in a relationship, including the taking on the behavior of the toxic partner? That is a very, very good question because I honestly went through that whole thing. And honestly, it's about doing the work, the self-care, the really digging into your own triggers and traumas and realizing why you were in that relationship in the first place. Why you attracted someone like that in the first place and really getting the trauma out of your physical body so you can become, you know, in alignment with your divine self. And so you're not in alignment with a toxic part of yourself. You become in alignment with who you're supposed to be, you know, perfect and full of love. So that's the work, doing the trauma work, doing the really big, you know, the shadow work, you know, which I talk about in my book. So,
yeah, absolutely. And by the way, earlier today, we gave away these books. I see Nyansa is on here, right? Mm-hmm. We gave away two Egyptian books of the dead, but we actually gave away a third one because a third person had actually had the right answer, we found, before somebody in the multi-chat. So we told that person, that's okay. Give us your address. We'll send you one, too. So even though I only have two here, I'm going to order a third one directly from Amazon and have it sent straight to their address. So we gave away three Egyptian books of the dead earlier today for answering a question about the land of Kem. And all three of these books have the papyrus of Ani inside of the text, which is incredible. All right. Thank you for the
thank you. Appreciate
it. Okay, listen, I'm gonna let you wrap up with them. I gotta go because I gotta get ready for the next podcast.
Okay.
Okay. All right, but you can wrap up with them and I will see you later on, all right?
All right. Love you. All right, guys. Well, that is it for tonight. Thank you guys for tapping in. That was another episode of Biohack Your Sex Life. Because if your relationship, you know, isn't doing well, your sex life is not going to be doing well either. So it all correlates together. Thank you guys so much for joining us. We always, you know, love all the pleasant comments and the interaction. And yeah, just make sure that you keep up with all of our lives. The Forbidden updates, we'll be updating on different things that are going on in the company. And yeah, just stay tuned. And next week, we are doing an interview with a very, very important and brilliant psychiatrist. So that will be the next Biohack Your Best Life. So I'm really excited for it. Lots of information, lots of science. And yes, yes, I will take care of that man. Of course I will. Thank you guys for tapping in. Appreciate you all. Until next time. Peace.
Hi, I'm Billy Carson, researcher, speaker, and best-selling author of The Compendium of the Emerald Tablets and Woke Doesn't Mean Broke. I'm inviting you to join me on ForbiddenKnowledge.tv to enjoy hours of great programming, learn the secrets of ancient Egypt, unexplained structures on the moon and Mars, financial literacy, holistic and healthy lifestyles. Go now to ForbiddenKnowledge.tv and get 3 days free. While there, you can enter to win a Rolls Royce. That's ForbiddenKnowledge.tv.
You are watching Forbidden Knowledge TV.
Hi, my name is Billy Carson, and I'm the president of Forbidden Knowledge. We have an amazing investment opportunity here for anyone who wants to buy shares in Forbidden Knowledge. The money that's generated from this crowdfunding platform is going to be used to bring on a new content acquisitions partner. We're going to hire a new in-house graphics designer, a social media manager, put together a customer service team and a customer service management program that will organize and satisfy all the different legs of Forbidden Knowledge, Inc., as well as, and of course, make more improved high quality streaming content for the Forbidden Knowledge TV platform, which right now is featured on Apple TV, Roku, Amazon Fire TV, iOS and Android apps, and also, of course, the web. The streaming platform is a year old right now and doing very, very well. And we're looking for your support where you can not only be a conscious customer, but also be a part owner in an amazing opportunity that includes streaming TV, book publishing, and e-commerce. Grow with us and earn with us. Forbidden Knowledge, Inc.
You are watching Forbidden Knowledge TV.
This is Billy Carson with ForbiddenKnowledge.tv. Forbidden Knowledge TV has just reached its 1 year anniversary. That's right, 1 year. And as a show of appreciation, we are giving all new subscribers a free 30-day trial of ForbiddenKnowledge.tv. That's 30 days to binge watch thousands of movies, documentaries, conferences, workshops, lectures, yoga classes, meditation courses, and so much more. So log on to ForbiddenKnowledge.tv from your computer or mobile device, or get the Forbidden Knowledge TV app on Apple TV, Roku, Amazon, iTunes, or Google Play today and use coupon code 30DAYSFREE. That's coupon code 30 days free on ForbiddenKnowledge.tv today.